This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 151.
When we talk about the core responsibility and accountability of HR, human is the key element, all people. And it's about how do we deliver talent, develop leaders, create the culture, build capability. Complex human beings are in the middle of all of that. People first is what makes HR such a critical capability. The people first element, JP, is that the design principles need to start with the people first and the experience. We sometimes in HR have our philosophies, have the science of performance, the science of development, the science of teams, and we quickly start designing, we partner, we buy technology, and we implement. We don't often tap into starting with the user experience first. We continue to challenge our teams on, let's start with the experience first.
How do you unlock the power of employee experience? Why is a people-first mindset so critical in modernizing HR? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott. And this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. If you're really serious about becoming a more business-focused and strategic HR leader, then you need to make attending my Next Gen HR Accelerator program a part of your 2025 development plan. And if you're a CHRO who wants your HR team to have even more influence and business impact, then you're going to want to send your team to my Next Gen HR Accelerator program as well. Because my Next Gen HR Accelerator program is a best-in-class leadership development program specifically designed to equip high-potential HR talent with the skills, mindset, and tools they need to become strategic business leaders and value creators. Over four intensive weeks, you'll build your business acumen and financial acumen. You'll sharpen your strategic thinking, elevate your executive influence and communication skills, and learn how to translate business strategy to HR initiatives that deliver impact and value. You also get targeted feedback and coaching to help you grow as a leader, as every Next Gen HR Accelerator participant receives 360 feedback, personal coaching from me, and leaves with a targeted from to development plan. That is why one past participant said the Next Gen HR Accelerator program completely transformed their approach to HR. Over the past year, over 100 HR leaders have been through the program from companies like Verizon, McDonald's, Nike, Prudential, Pacific Life, Hershey, Kohler, and many more. Our next cohort starts September 9th and registration is now open. Space is limited and we expect to sell out. To learn more about the Next Gen HR Accelerator program, go to futureofhr.com or reach out to me directly to learn more. And with that, my guest this week is Aseel Omar. Aseel is the Vice President of People Experience at AbbVie, which is a global biopharmaceutical company with 55,000 employees and whose mission is to discover and deliver innovative medicines and solutions that address complex health issues and enhance people's lives. In her role, Aseel is responsible for leading EEDI efforts to foster diversity and inclusion at AbbVie, modernizing HR practices to reach more employees while elevating their experience, and leading mergers and acquisitions for HR. Aseel joined AbbVie in Singapore in 2014 to lead talent management and acquisition in Japan and the Asia-Pacific regions. Since then, she's held roles of growing responsibility within human resources, including talent management, HR business partnership, strategy, technology, data analytics, organization and employee research, talent acquisition, and human capital planning. Prior to joining AbbVie, she held leadership development positions at Unilever and played a key role in standing up Unilever's flagship leadership development hub, 4 Acres, in Singapore, bringing Unilever's world-class executive education to Asia. In addition, Aseel is also a First Mover Fellow at the Aspen Institute for Business and Society. It was such a pleasure to spend time with and learn from Aseel as we discussed why we should embrace new opportunities as a way to reinvent ourselves and our careers, how AbbVie maintains a unique culture of purpose, performance, and care, why HR practitioners must become students of both human motivation and organizational transformation to drive real impact, why it's important to start with the employee experience first when designing systems, and her advice to HR leaders who want to start a people experience team, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Aseel. Aseel, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Great to be here, JP. I'm doing great.
It's great to have you on the podcast. We've been talking about having you on for a little while, so it's great that we finally got all the stars to align and have you on today. And I wanted to start just talking a little bit about your career. You've had this amazing career from studying education to advance women in the Middle East to now being the vice president of people experience at AbbVie. What's the thread that connects your career and all those experiences you've had?
And it's funny, JP, as you asked that question, the two bookends that you mentioned are actually somewhat related, but ironically, everything in the middle does not necessarily add up. I've done roles across the spectrum of HR, whether it's business HR, talent management, data analytics. But really, I think the common thread comes down to my roots, probably like many of your guests anchor back to. Our unique experiences do become our superpowers and kind of the guiding light for our careers. For me, I was pretty early on in my life. I didn't articulate it in this fancy purpose statement way. I didn't necessarily know it, but upon reflection, I was really driven by unlocking human potential, which is why I pursued the study of education and education systems. And also more specifically, JP, is really challenging conventional wisdom, conventional systems to reduce barriers and unlock human potential. So I think I took that spirit into every role. I never did a job just to do a job. I always went in there really immersing myself in the conditions that are driving human development or human performance in that particular context, figuring out what's not working or what needs to change or what needs to be transformed, and then just going after that, whether it's a kind of basic talent management position, data and analytics. I think I always pursued it with those two elements in mind.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that because I've got two children. So my son's 14, my daughter's 12. And think about like the traits we were kind of born with. I mean, do you, or they're inherited, but where do you feel like that kind of, that nature of you wanting to come and make things better and figure things out and just improve things? Where did that come from you? Were you as a child doing those things?
So definitely there is a nature element to it and nurture by way of experiences. I have to just say, though, JP, because you struck a thought, and I'll get back to your question, but one of the most memorable epiphanies for me and what I wanted to do with my life and career was, I don't know if you're familiar with Ken Robinson, who wrote the book in 2006, early 2000s, Schools Kill Creativity. And he was basically, his thesis was that we kids, humans, are naturally creative creatures. But our education systems are wired and standardized and developed in such a way that actually takes away from our creativity and doesn't serve our unique human potential. And I read that book and said, yes, this is the business I'm in. Yes. Challenging conventional wisdom to unlock potential creativity and break barriers. To your question, there was an innate element that I was born with, but also a product of my experience. And I won't take you through all the details, but I am from the Middle East. That comes with a lot of stories of movement, displacement, hard work, adaptation, discovery, adventure, but also the realities of access to education and development through a journey of displacement. I early on just connected with this idea of access, opportunity, development, career. From an early on, I pursued teaching opportunities in the middle of Africa, pursued teaching opportunities in Jordan. So I think it did start at an early age. It just continued to grow.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I mean, you've had some incredible experiences, and I think experiences that, to your point of like being a superpower, that help us become us. And especially in the age of AI, us being human, our experiences is what really will start to define us even more. We'll all hopefully lean into that more and appreciate each other's experiences more and different points of view more, right? Because you've had experiences that I haven't had, and they actually sound incredible. And as I thought about that, you've had these roles where throughout your career, you mentioned a little bit, but you've had to step into HR analytics, talent acquisition, now equity, but you really haven't studied that. You didn't go to school. You didn't do that for your whole career, and you're stepping into the unknown. Talk more about what that's like to step in the unknown and where you get that confidence to go and learn and do something.
It's funny. That definitely is the theme of my career. Every role is stepping into the unknown, as you mentioned, including JP Country. At some stages, I was taking on whole new disciplines within HR, and it involved a move, whether it was Hong Kong, Singapore, more recently here to the US. Back to nature versus nurture, we're a product of our journeys. I've always embraced the different. I've always embraced adventure on a personal and professional level. That's not to say that they weren't terrifying at the same time. So those two elements, energy, excitement, challenge, and fear, are not mutually exclusive concepts. As I reflect on all the changes, one, I always say yes, typically, more so than not. And I go in recognizing, some of us call it imposter syndrome, that there is a significant gap between competence and confidence. I've developed this formula where I dive in, I immerse myself in the craft, whether it's through inhaling podcasts, books, talking to people. I listened recently, a defense lawyer on a podcast who talks about the art of defending criminals.
Uh-oh, wait, are you going to make a career announcement? Are you moving into defense law next? Is that what's happening?
I know, right? He did talk about taking on a challenge.
Just making sure.
But JP, what he said was the art of getting proximate. I was like, that's it. To close the gap between competence and confidence going into new spaces. Yes, it's this learning element of it, immersion, but also getting proximate to those you are trying to impact, to the context, to the people. That's been my formula. And then figuring out, all right, where's the opportunity? Where are the barriers? How do I come in with a blank slate? Really observe, immerse, and get proximate, and then figure out what needs to transform, change to expand impact of that particular discipline.
Have you found it's getting easier for you to step into these roles because you have done it a few times and feel like you have a playbook, or is it hard every time?
I think it's hard every time, but the confidence, because now you've got those proof points of there is a form. And so, yes, it's uncomfortable. And oftentimes the table gets more, because the more senior we get, the more skin in the game we have, the more exposure, the more critical your decisions, your approach. Does it get easier? Not necessarily. Does it get more fun? Because now you've got the confidence that, okay, there's a way to approach this. My toolbox, I've built a toolbox that I can tap into.
So it's still terrifying, still a lot of work, still have to put yourself out there, but you have confidence. You've got proof points now that have made it a little bit more likely that when you say yes, you feel like, yep, I'm going to be okay. I can do this. I've done it before, but it may not be comfortable.
For the most part. Of course, tap into our advisors, our champions, our coaches. But I've learned, particularly through the last kind of VP bigger awards. My first VP position was HR, technology, data and analytics, not my space. Worked with brilliant people on my team. The next job, talent acquisition, big transformation, high exposure, big team, global. Again, very new space. I really learned the value, of collective wisdom and just this idea of listening, getting the best out of those I'm working with, and what it takes to lead transformation to next kingdom.
Yeah, it's inspiring. I think people are going to learn a lot just from hearing your experience and the fact that it talks about doing it afraid in some ways, right? Taking that step into the unknown and just making it work. So I love that you've done that, and you've done it so many different times. And now it's been 2 years now, but let's talk about a big role you have at AbbVie. You've been doing that for 2 years, but obviously the political environment has changed. If we're being honest, we all understand what's happening in the environment. It's shifted a little bit, but how are you and AbbVie defining what success looks like for you and the organization?
Love that question. Something I've learned in the last 2 years, and maybe probably even in the talent acquisition role, but with crisis comes opportunity. That is a philosophy that I care. No crisis is too big to navigate through. And if anything, seize opportunity to reinvent ourselves, to learn, to progress. And that's really been the theme of the last, I would say, 18 months. In terms of what success looks like for equity, and you know, our acronym is Equity, Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion here at AbbVie. I would say one, JP, it's always been part of our success formula. You know, we're truly a company that is purpose-driven. Our patients meeting unmet needs is our unifying purpose. We also are very performance-driven. I'll be seeing this firsthand over the couple of weeks in your work with us. We have a high bar and we go after it with fierce resolve. And we're also very principles-led since day one. And I think you had Tim Richmond on the podcast to talk about culture. Since day one, our commitment to people, inclusion, and culture has been steadfast. It's been one of our four business strategies with our first CEO and that generation of strategies, and now with Walt Michael and the next generation of strategies. So I think one, it's always been part of our success formula. Two, it's hardwired in our principles that we at AbbVie embrace diversity and inclusion. What does that mean? That we embrace diversity of thought, diverse backgrounds, diverse perspectives. That's the only way we're going to solve the most complex challenges and meet some of the most complex health needs of the patients that we serve, 60 million patients and counting across the world. Disease doesn't discriminate. And so it's critical that we have that diversity of thought and backgrounds at the individual level, at the team level, and then at the organizational level. That's a deeply held belief. I think most of us in the medicine space, in the consumer space, would agree. We also have a fundamental belief that collaboration and voice is more than volume. It is about high trust. It is about that psychological safety for the diversity of thought to thrive, that unmet needs are ours to solve, and that the most complex problems demand diversity of thought.
I think it's certainly working. Your commitment as a company to the culture you're creating, that really does have amazing innovations. It's also been recognized as one of the best places to work. Time and time again, AbbVie is just the top of those best places to work lists. And I'm wondering, can you share a little bit more about what makes the culture special and different from other places that you've worked?
And JP, I've had the fortune to have worked in some pretty spectacular places, whether it's a logistics company growing fast with an innovative CEO out of the Middle East, or a premium talent academy type company in a consumer goods, and now at AbbVie. And you know, what makes us unique is, yes, our steadfast commitment to culture, and back to the other question, and culture for all. But we really take it seriously that we are building a workplace and culture where all can thrive. And we hardwire to that. But I think even more so, what makes us special is that unwavering commitment to address unmet needs, whether it's in the patients and those that we serve or in the workplace. It really does unite us. And there is a balance of fierce resolve for execution and performance, but balanced with humility, collegiality, friendship, care. So we're a company that really performs and that cares. And I often talk to leaders, whether they're in our company or those who've left, and I stay in touch with, And consistently, those who join us say, wow, have these cultures different. And those who leave us tell us all the ways that we could do things better. But consistently, culture is not one of culture is what they view is what they miss. And I do think it's that combination of purpose, performance, and care.
Yeah, super helpful. I think it's an incredible company. And what I've experienced with AbbVie leaders, whether it's Tim Richmond or Angela Lane that I've gotten to know yourself, others that have been on the podcast, but I've obviously gotten to know some of the AbbVie folks, it's a high intellect, low ego culture. Smart people, low ego, and really focused on, you said, patients and doing really amazing things, which has just been special. So it's not surprising the leadership you guys have had, that's really kind of gone through all the team members you have worldwide, which is amazing. But Asil, I'd be really neglective. I didn't ask this because it might be HR leaders listening who are wanting to really make their organizations more equitable and learn from you. What advice might you have around how organizations can focus or deepen their equity practices at their company?
There are two categories of thought to answer that question. I think the first category I would call table stakes, critical table stakes that you've got to get right. And JP, it won't surprise you when I say just ensuring that diversity and inclusion practices, function, strategies are integrated and connected to the business. In very concretely, how does it serve the specific strategy? How does it serve the business? How does it serve the culture that a business is seeking to create? And making those connections incredibly clear. I would say the other one is that cross-functional element, aligning with every pillar of the business in terms of how we bring our diversity and inclusion elements to life. And then, of course, driving execution with clarity and focus. So again, all that is table stakes. Connect to strategy, set a clear vision, execute. Outcomes don't lie. What outcomes are we after? Just being very concrete and avoiding working in service of equity, inclusion, and isolation of how does that connect to the business, to the transformation efforts, to leadership, to culture, and to make those connections safe. I would say the other elements, I think, which I've taken out of it personally as a leader, but also I think critical to the success of any DEI capability. And I think one is really honing in on the craft of the human condition. A lot of the work that we do in diversity and inclusion is tapping into the human condition and the human science of performance. It's really understanding the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how that shows up in team. How does that show up in individual development, performance, and growth? How does it show up at an organization and other culture? And that becomes the language of diversity and inclusion is that human condition. That is the power that inclusion can unlock. And so I think as DEI practitioners, our craft needs to be the human condition and how it works with teams and coaches. And then secondly, every organization today is dealing with transformation and change. I would get even more granular on how diversity and inclusion, the capabilities, the toolbox that we are building for our leaders and for our organization, how does it tap into the science of human performance in driving change, in driving transformation? We often demand innovation and don't really understand creativity. We demand change, but we overlook what it takes to build followership across a diverse set of constituents to that direction of change. The more we connect those dots for our business, the more we bring diversity and inclusion to life. I always say it's the fuel to the engine of the organization. It can be the fuel that really drives change, transformation, culture. And I think that mindset shift and that language shift is critical. And then go, okay, what are the tools that we need to sharpen? What are the tools? What's the toolbox that we're giving our leaders? And how do we build it? And how do we?
Yeah, really insightful, Asil. I really, really like the idea of the fuel piece, but also the going back to the human condition, thinking about this a little differently. Speaking of the human condition, you lead people experience at AbbVie, where your philosophy is around people value first. And so in an age where everyone's talking about AI, we can't even go online or go to a talk or go anywhere without someone giving you a lecture about AI. What does people first actually mean to you and to AbbVie?
JP, you teach this in a lot of your programs. When we talk about the core responsibility and accountability of HR, human is the key element, all people. And it's about how do we deliver talent, develop leaders, create the culture, build capability. Complex human beings are in the middle of all of that. People first is what makes HR such a critical capability in businesses and really in the world in solving some of the most complex problems, including now that they exist in a digitally enabled world, as you mentioned. It's funny, when I first got this responsibility, the perception was I've got very two different jobs. Equity, equality, and diversity and inclusion, very different of people experience. People experience is all about modernizing HR to create more capacity, efficiency, so we could do more with less. So it's easier to do some of the most basic tasks so we can shift our energy and time to more value-add tasks, right? So that's a big part of people experience. The second part is how do we scale for reach and impact? AI and technology now gives us an ability to scale development in a way that we've only dreamed about, to scale coaching in a way that we've only dreamed about. And then lastly is how do we get ready for a world of agents and more AI in our ecosystem and in our organization? All being said, very lofty goals. We're all going after them, not unique to my function or AbbVie. The people first element, JP, is that the design principles need to start with the people first and the experience. We sometimes in HR have our philosophies, have the science of performance, the science of development, the science of teams, and we quickly start designing. We partner, we buy technology, and we implement. We don't often tap into starting with the user experience first, really understanding how is this going to live? How is this going to land? Because we can design systems that are around individual performance, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, but there's friction on teams. What's going on? We've thrown too much at the leader. Where is our leader going to start, and what tool, and how are they going to find this toolbox that we've built for them? And sometimes we can get lost in self-affirmation. We're confirming our own processes. We're confirming the outcomes that we have designed for. I think a people-first approach, I continue to challenge our teams. We continue to challenge our teams on, let's start with the experience first, that whole innovation design concept. It's been practiced for years. We could always do more of it and better in the space of HR. That's where my energy is in that fight.
Yeah, it's a good reminder because I think at HR, sometimes we talk about people first and we're like, oh, we're going to design people first, HR experiences, talent practices, etc. But we actually end up doing HR first. We think, hey, this is our process. This is what we know works. This is how we think about it. We don't do the focus groups. And there's reasons for it. We're really busy. You can't do it for every project, but for the really important initiatives, you have to start with the end users. You've got to go do focus groups. You've got to take a product management mindset and have that people experience mindset, which can be a game changer because you'll understand things differently and you'll make different decisions. It's something I'm really passionate about.
I love that you said, what did you call it? The product?
Well, product management. I mean, you basically become a product manager in the product management mindset, right? And they're really the director, producer for the movie of whatever they're designing in organizations and agile. And I think HR has got to take that mindset on a lot more.
Exactly right. And now more than ever, because we're surrounded by products, we're surrounded by big promises in terms of what AI can do, how they'll transform experiences. That mindset is critical today, Mark.
Now, Seal, if someone is thinking, gosh, I want to start a people experience team, we want to go on the same journey, we want to have people first and bring this to life, where should they start on that journey? How do you start putting a people experience team? Because I know it's not just words for AbbVie. We can obviously just change the nomenclature for HR, but you guys really are a people experience team looking at these things using design principles, et cetera, to redesign HR. But how do you get started on that journey?
One is back to outcomes don't lie and just kind of establishing intended outcomes. So I think one is being really clear on what is it that we want to achieve when we say people experience at our company? What in that experience do we want to address, shift, for what outcomes? Before jumping in to, all right, what technology do we think is going to make an experience easier, better, simpler, faster? But really, as a whole, what's the vision? What's the intended outcome that we're after? I would say the second, particularly if you're going into it from a leadership perspective, and this kind of goes back to the first question we talked about, but going into it with, yes, a fierce resolve, move at pace, time is now, but also with humility. I think there's a lot we need to learn, again, listen, product manager mentality. So there's that mindset of to go into those this work with those two elements, really deeply listen to what's going on in the people experience and where to prioritize. And then third is more the practical element. Some are starting with, and we've taken this approach with pros and cons, some start with dive in, prototype, proof of concept, build, prototype, build, prototype, build, kind of one hot spot at a time, moments that matter at a time. You can also take the bigger approach, really build the infrastructure, bring together different parts of the technology team, HR team, data and analytics, and really structurally put them together so that you are building a more sustainable model that can cut across and work across HR. There's two ways. I'm a fan of doing them both at the same time. We always have to be in the business of prototyping and building, listening. And then how do you shift your HR op model to support that kind of transformation, mindset shift in their sustaining?
Yeah, really insightful. I think so many organizations are going through this right now from an HR function standpoint in terms of how do we start to optimize the people experience, leveraging technology, where do HR leaders and HR business partners play? Where do COEs play? What can be transactional work that can be automated? What can't be? And you got to prioritize because we don't have endless budgets and we don't have endless teams in HR. And so I think that's part of the real work is figuring out what matters most in your organizations and when, and how do you start to put that in place?
Exactly. Because it's a very different approach to say, I'm going to be in the business of creating capacity. I'm going to be laser focused on operational efficiencies. Very different muscle and approach. And I'm going to be about transforming what it means to grow and learn at my company, how I give access to every employee, to a coach at their fingertips, because that's my priority and that's where I'm going to spend my effort. It is and all requires its own type of investment, stakeholder mix, and change efforts.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're doing amazing work there at AbbVie around the people experience, and your team is working hard to transform that. So thanks for sharing a little more about the insight there. Acil, last question for you, and you know it's coming. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Maybe I'll say, because I'm just obsessed with this right now, is the science of human performance. It is going to come down to us in HR, with transformation being the key word, with technology being the key word. In HR, how do we stay attuned to the human condition, to the science of performance, to all things human in the work that we do? Because that is the unlock at the end of the day.
Acil, thank you so much for being on the Future of HR podcast. It is about the human condition. I think we've all learned a lot, and it was super fun to be with you today.
Thank you, JP.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Acil for sharing her insights into what it takes to unlock the power of the employee experience at all levels across the organization. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter. which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download the HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from 100 plus thought leaders with simple, actionable, and proven strategies to advance your career. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest, Juliet Shore, a best-selling author, economist, and sociologist. Juliet's going to be talking to us about her new book, 4 Days a Week, the life-changing solution for reducing employee stress, improving well-being, and working smarter. This book's a result of years of research, and the results are going to surprise you. This is a great conversation and one you will not want to miss. Thanks again for being part of the Future of HR community.